The candidate who came in third in the city's mayor's race says he'll be back. Bill Bishop joins the show in just a moment. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio, and now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Don't miss it, because just ahead, Bill Bishop will discuss the local political scene and why he's running again for Jacksonville mayor in 4 years. You can get on the line now with your questions and thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, April is National Foot Care Month. We'll have important information on taking care of those feet, plus The Spectator with all this weekend's events. All of that ahead. But first this morning, after placing third with 17% of the vote in the race for Jacksonville mayor, City Councilman Bill Bishop says he'll be back. Bishop declined to endorse either Mayor Brown or challenger Lenny Curry in the upcoming May runoff election. And he says he's going to run again in 2019, telling his supporters not to throw out their campaign signs. So what's the road ahead? Well, the former candidate and perhaps erstwhile future candidate Bill Bishop joins us in studio now to tell us all about it. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show. Lots of calls already for Bill Bishop. Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. We're already getting your comments on Facebook, too. Lots of feedback about this. So the other day, Bill, there was a lot of anticipation as to whether you might endorse Mayor Brown or Lenny Curry for mayor. You declined to endorse either one. Why?
Primarily, I would say because of what I'd said before was that it is very important for candidates for office to tell people what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, what do they stand for, give them specifics about the issues. And I haven't heard that from either of the other two candidates to the degree that I think makes sense. And I challenge them both to answer people's questions honestly with real answers.
And so what types of specific issues did you feel weren't dealt with in the way that you would have liked to have seen?
How are we going to pay for the pension underfunded situation? How are we going to pay for 147 police officers that have been lost? If the port is important, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to maintain our infrastructure? All of these issues, how are we going to reinflate funding for libraries, deal with park maintenance, all these issues that we know over the last 4 or 5 years have just simply been run down to the ground because of our financial situation. And we all know that it is not improving to any great degree. Everybody says we can handle all of this stuff and we don't need new taxes. How are you going to handle it specifically?
So in declining to endorse, where do you think your supporters, a significant chunk of the pie, 17%, where will they go in the May runoff?
That's a good question. My supporters are smart people. They do their homework. They ask questions. And as I've challenged everybody, ask questions and demand answers. My supporters came from all spectrums of the city. Some, I'm sure, will vote for Mr. Curry. Some will vote for Mayor Brown. And some may not vote at all. And some are probably going to take a lot of time, as I hope they all do, to figure out what they think is in the best interest of the city.
And we'll go to calls for Council Bill Bishop in just a moment at 549-2937. So when you made this announcement the other day, you told your supporters not to throw out their Bill Bishop for mayor signs. You're running again in 2019?
That's my intention, yes. The signs have no date on them, so they'll still work.
Why run again? 4 years is a long time. What's your strategy to keep your name top of mind with voters so that you can try again in 4 years?
Well, we're exploring all options on that. Obviously, I have to remain relevant in the community in order to do that. One of the things about this campaign, we learned a lot. And one of the things, there's a huge world of difference, and I knew this, but until you actually go through it, you really don't appreciate it. It's a whole different scale to run for mayor than it is for city council, and I think we just simply didn't prepare soon enough for it, and I think that was part of our problem. We won't make that mistake again.
It will take 4 years, you think, to mount a successful second time at this?
Well, no, not really. And thinking about it, I mean, we're not even through this election yet. And
who do you think is going to win this election?
I'm not going to make a prediction there. I think it'll be very close. And in reality, no, it doesn't take 4 years of active campaigning. I think people don't pay attention to it that far out. But I think from our own team perspective, we have preparations to make. And I think that realistically, a lot of what from the campaign side that you're involved in isn't on the public side. You're doing background work. You're talking to people in private. You're having meetings with folks. The public campaign side of things is really pretty much in the last year. Our problem is we did everything at one time.
And you're termed out on council?
Correct.
And so you'll go back to the private sector for a while, correct?
Yeah, right. I've never left it. But
You'll continue. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And lots of calls for former mayoral candidate Bill Bishop. He says he's going to run again in 2019. What are your thoughts and questions for Bishop and thoughts about the city's mayor's race? 549-2937 to join the show. And we have calls from across the listening area. Let's go to Larry at the Beaches. Hi, Larry.
Yes, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on the show. Big
sure.
fan.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Councilman Bishop, people can tell a lot about a person's character by how they act when things don't go their way, such as a stinging campaign loss. I would like to know, after your defeat, did you reach out to my mayor, Alvin Brown, and possibly his challenger, and what did you say to them, sir?
I've talked to Mayor Brown. I will probably be having a meeting with Mr. Curry here in the next few days. We just talked about the campaign itself, how it went. Mayor Brown congratulated me on running a nice, clean campaign, and I congratulated him on the same. He never got nasty, and I told him I appreciated that. We just talked about ways. We all agree we want Jacksonville to be a great place, and we talked about ways that I can help do that.
Both of those campaigns sought your endorsement, correct?
Yeah, yes, but not to the degree that they've been breaking down my door or anything like that. But yes, certainly both sides would like it, absolutely.
And you're a Republican. Lenny Curry is running for mayor as a Republican. Has there been any blowback from the local REC, the Republican Executive Committee, the local GOP power structure, about your declining to endorse this candidate?
A little bit. I'm sure they're probably still trying to figure out what to make of it themselves. I haven't since I made the announcement, I haven't talked to anybody other than I did speak to with Mr. Curry yesterday, and we talked about getting together in the next couple of days.
And let's go to Mike in Bay Meadows. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning to all.
Good morning.
I'm a Bishop supporter, and that's the question of the day about where will my vote go, even though it's just one vote. You know, I'm a transplant from Chicago, and I'm here in Jacksonville now. And I'm in design and construction.
Me too, Mike.
Hey, it's like it's eerie that the unfunded pension liability from Detroit and Chicago area is sitting at about $300 million now, with $20 billion worth of unfunded liability overall. And they, at one point, they were Jacksonville, and you just keep kicking the can down the road. And that's why I decided to appoint Mr. Bishop. Even though I'm a registered Democrat and I don't agree with all things everybody say, he's been level-handed and honest with the reality of the checkbook. And what he's told me is these things cost money, they're real, and he at least explains and honest with me about how you plan to solve the problem. Even if you don't like it, you got to respect truthfulness. And I'm telling you, it's going to cost both candidates a lot of votes because they're not being level with the taxpayers who are not just basically not giving enough credit to see through the smoke and mirrors.
That's Mike in Bay Meadows. Reference Chicago.
Mike, you're absolutely right. That is the fundamental issue right now. Everything hinges on how we're going to pay our bills. Because if we can't pay our bills, we will not have a city that anybody wants to live in. And that's really the issue here.
Well, let me ask you, though, so many people said about your campaign, well, Bill Bishop is going to say he's going to speak the truth because he probably can't win. What does that say about politics, that if a candidate is doing well, polling well, that he can't get into those specifics because it might affect his or her ability to win?
Well, I think that's a pretty cynical viewpoint. And I think it's probably not – I don't think it's so much the fact that – you can't, if you tell the truth, you can't win. I think it's more a factor that there's so many people, such a large percentage of our voter base, it just simply doesn't pay attention.
Let's go to John on the South Side. Hey, John, good morning.
Melissa, thank you for taking my call. I'm a believer. And, you know, going forward, you know, to keep Councilman Bishop's name recognition, you know, I would just suggest Believer Tours. And, you know, we're a river city. St.
Now, John,
river.
John, I gotta stop you there. You call almost all the time about the river, and I love you for it, but I need you to call in about something else besides the river at least once. I think this is John Nooney on the phone.
Yeah, good morning, John.
Hey, John. And John, I hear you. I hear you. I know.
Okay, well, can I just share? Can I share this real quick?
Sure.
There is legislation when you talk about funded obligations. You know, just the legislative dominoes, if you will. And I would just ask, you know, Councilman Bishop, if he would ask that the Port Harbor dredging project be put on the agenda for the April 15th Waterways Commission meeting. He can reach out to Councilman Love, the chair of Waterways, or Clay Yarbrough, the president of the city council, because the next day is the Port Task Force report, and they will make a decision where they'll move forward. If they move forward, funding will be the next question. And then there we are looking at another financial obligation for this community. And part of that funding was a mitigation, you know, with the breaching of the Rodman Dam. So, you know, at this point would be just to ask, you know, Councilman Bishop, if before he leaves office, would make that simple request and see where, you know, Yarbrough or Love would see that that issue is put before, you know, a commission where it would be on the record for everyone.
All right, John, thanks for the call.
That is a good idea. I'm surprised that the dredging is not an issue with the Waterways Commission, because it probably should be.
It probably should be. Yeah, that's a very good point. Tom on the west side. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to y'all, too. My question is this. I'm just wondering, after 4 years of leadership in the wrong direction, does Mr. Bishop think the city's going to be salvageable when he does run for mayor again?
I'm a very optimistic person. I think Jacksonville has a lot of things going for it. And so the answer to that question, absolutely, I think it's salvageable.
What do you think Jacksonville has going for it?
It has a great climate. It has great people. It has a great river. It has a great environment. It has the great bones in downtown that can be redeveloped. We've got every imaginable lifestyle that you want, from a condo on the river downtown to 100 acres in the woods and everything in between. We just have we have all the basics here to be a great city.
Dan in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Dan. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Bishop. You know, I'm a little bit concerned about all this money going out the door. I mean, here we could spend $4 million on a Jaguar sign that doesn't bring any income whatsoever into Jacksonville. But we can avoid some of the other things, you know, with the dredging and all this other stuff. You know, I'm quite concerned about all this money going out. Why can't we file bankruptcy? I mean, if we're paying too much money for the port, why don't we take some of that money that we're putting into the port to pay some of these pensions off? I mean, we're moving money from one place to another, and we just, you know, shuffling it around.
All right, Dan, thanks.
Dan, right now we're not putting any money into the port, and that's really the question about whether we can afford to put any money into the dredging project. Mm-hmm. With respect to bankruptcy, that idea has been tossed around, but unfortunately we still have too much unused taxing authority for a bankruptcy judge to allow it.
Let me ask you about a previous caller said he's fearful Jacksonville could go the way of Chicago or Detroit in terms of our finances. The city council deadlocked on that pension vote. You were part of that. What's the way forward on pension?
The way forward on pensions at this point is the way it is outlined under Florida law, which is traditional collective bargaining between the mayor and the unions.
And that's what a judge ruled, that the agreement between the city's police and fire pension fund is not valid.
That's correct. The judge ruled that the agreement was invalid because he agreed that it was collective bargaining and it was not done in the sunshine as prescribed by Florida law, so therefore the agreement is void, which means that they're back to square one. I am very happy that the mayor had said the city is not going to appeal. I think it would be silly and foolish to do so when we, the city, is now in a better position because the agreement is void. What the Police and Fire Pension Board is going to do is their business. I hope they don't appeal it either, but if they do, they're going to be on an island all by themselves because they won't get any support for that.
Now, you ran against Mayor Brown. There was some criticism about this vote. Some who support the mayor see it as partisanship, a way for the council to deny him a victory going into the May runoff. What's your reaction to those remarks?
Well, people will think what they want to think about that. I have been steadfast against that proposal from the beginning because it also did not comply with traditional Florida collective bargaining laws. It was a 10-year deal instead of a 3-year deal. It was just wrong on the outset. The other piece of it that I just simply would not support was John Keane's golden parachute pension. It's obscenely huge. It's flat out wrong, and it's been ruled to be illegal. And I would never vote for that.
Bruce on the north side. Hey, Bruce, how are you today?
I'm okay. How are you all doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, I just wanted to call. I called Mr. Bishop during his last visit here, and was in full agreement with him as it related to the this pension. But I want to comment on this on another election, that being the sheriff. Ken Jefferson, I'm kind of on the fence as far as who I'm going to support. But Ken Jefferson is scheduled for a news conference over at Cleveland Arms today. And if he's going to piggyback what those ministers did in requesting an independent investigation, all this nonsense into what happened there, they need to address the real problem, and that is the teenage pregnancy and these young boys not having the kind of influence that they need. So if Ken Jefferson's going to do that, then he'll lose my support because you have to face reality about what the real problem is, and he should not piggyback what these ministers are talking about because, you can't expect the sheriff's office to change what they do in response to crime.
Okay, thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Bruce. And that brings up the sheriff's race. Do you have a dog in that fight?
I'm studying both candidates just like everybody else at this point.
Okay. And here, we'll go back to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Lots of emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Here's an email from Matt Corrigan, a frequent contributor to this program with UNF's Political Science Department. You talked a little bit about the pension issue. He also would like to know your thoughts about violent crime in the city. How would you advise both candidates on how to target crime while at the same time increasing trust in the African American community around police and public safety?
Well, not being a law enforcement professional, my own dealings with police over the years in my own neighborhood in various different arenas, it's like most things. You have to talk to people. You have to communicate. If you can't talk to people are afraid of what they don't know. And police are the authority, and they need to reach out to communities so that the communities understand what they do, what their role is. Learn the people in the community in which they work. In my own neighborhood, we have neighborhood watch people that have the zone commander's cell phone number on speed dial. I mean, there's a very good communication between the police that patrol our area and our neighborhood. There's many neighborhoods that don't have that luxury. And unfortunately, the police, they're the ones with the power and control. So they shouldn't be the only ones that have to do this, but they're in a position of authority, so they got to start the conversation.
Here's another question from Matt. In 4 months, another city budget cycle begins. Are we still looking at serious cuts to services?
My guess is that this year will be pretty much a status quo from the current year. Revenue will be up a little bit. Property tax collection is up through property valuations and the organic growth that we've had. It won't be tremendous. The pension payment chart that we've all seen shows a slight increase for next year, but not a huge increase. My guess is we're going to be in the same position we were in the current budget year. Whatever income increases in revenue are going to be taken up in increases in expenses, and we're not going to be able to make any headroads to any great degree on anything that's been cut over the years. The money just simply isn't coming in fast enough.
A tweet from a listener. Does Councilman Bishop believe he will be running for an open seat for mayor or against an incumbent in 2019?
We'll know that after May 19th.
True, but you must have some idea that, for example, it would be easier to run for an open seat as opposed to an incumbent.
Well, there's no question about it. It's easier running for an open seat.
All you're going to say about that?
That's all I'm going to say right now.
Some comments on Facebook for Councilman Bill Bishop, who declined to endorse a candidate in the city's mayor's race after garnering 17% of the vote. He is going to run again in 2019, and we'll go back to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Jenny on Facebook, just keep staying true to your convictions. Glad to see you're not going to kiss anyone's A to help win yourself some extra votes. Questions about which sheriff candidate you support. You already answered that. And let's see. Does Councilman Bishop consider what happened to Matt Carlucci in 2003 when he endorsed the black Democrat Nat Glover for mayor when you chose not to endorse this time?
Quite frankly, I didn't even, that has been mentioned about what happened to Matt. Matt made the decision he did because he believed in it. I've known Matt for 30 years. Matt is a very honorable man, and he does what he believes. And in his case, he thought that was the right thing to do. In my case, I didn't think there was any benefit necessarily to endorsing either person. I ran because I thought I was the best person to run in the race. And at this point now, the two remaining candidates need to do the same thing.
And so we'll see who wins on May 19th. You've already made the announcement you will run again no matter who is elected. You said you learned a lot from this experience. What will you do differently next time?
We will start laying the groundwork earlier. And basically line up financial supporters, in a sense, much earlier than we did this time. That's part of the behind the scenes part of a campaign that we didn't actually do very well. I basically made up my mind and I announced and I just then started everything. And unfortunately, in the world of politics at that level, you really can't do that. You've got to build more of an infrastructure behind you before you do that sort of thing.
How will you build that infrastructure without the GOP power broker support in this county if they decide they will withhold support from you because you didn't endorse their preferred candidate this time?
We have a lot of work to do yet, and that's one of the things we'll have to work through.
Any final thoughts about the next 4 years?
Well, number one, I'm not going away. Nobody's ever accused me of not having an opinion on something. And we're working through all of that right now just to figure out what's the best way to stay engaged in the community. There's no lack of things to do, and there's no lack of things to get involved with. So I have one thing I'm sure I will not be bored.
Bill Bishop, as always, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Much more still ahead later. A look at all this weekend's events with The Spectator. But up next, taking care of your feet. April is Foot Care Month. And if you've got some aching dogs, we've got some advice. That's in a moment.
I'm Christian McBride. This week on Jazz Night in America, Choro music is fast, precise, virtuosic, Brazilian, and interpreted by clarinetist Anat Cohen at Jazz Lincoln Center.
And we like to call it the father of samba and the grandfather of bossa nova. And I just love it.
That's this week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
First Coast Connect is on the go, broadcasting from Jacksonville's One Spark Festival, showcasing innovative projects in arts, music, science, and technology as creators collaborate, connect, and compete for high-stakes financial support. Join host Melissa Ross at the Mocha Jacksonville Theater to be a part of the studio audience April 7th, 8th, or 9th at 8 p.m. Learn more at wjct.org/events.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, one of the most neglected parts of the human health care program is the foot, but it's so important. They have to last us a lifetime. Our feet support us and move us forward all at the same time, and very few things in nature or man-made can do the amazing things that the human foot does every day. But as we age, problems with our feet tend to pile up, and they can be painful and expensive. Did you know that April is actually National Foot Care Month? And here with some great advice on how to take care of your feet, we welcome Earl R. Horowitz, DPM, here to give us lots of good information. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on the show. So you are a well-regarded podiatrist around town, and I did not realize this, but it's great to have you on because April is National Foot Care Month. Lots of good information to share about the foot, which, as you know, is an amazing mechanical structure.
It is amazing for many, many reasons. Most people, we should really call this Foot Awareness Month,
yeah,
because most people aren't aware of their feet until they start hurting, and that's the shame of the problem. We should be looking at our foot because it's the most, probably one of the most abused parts of the human body, and the understanding is there's 26 bones in each foot, which is one quarter of all the bone structure of the body. It has at least 100 muscles and ligaments. It has 250,000 sweat glands associated with it. And this is something that we, as you mentioned, it does so many things in controlling the way we walk and the way we do things. And we tend to say, well, it's just a foot. And if you want, if you were a comedian, the easiest thing to get a laugh is say, oh, I got a bunion. And people think that's hysterical
right,
unless you've got one.
Unless you've got one. And as we age, bone deformities like bunions, hammer toes, and all kinds of other problems like plantar fasciitis, diabetics in particular have trouble with their feet. If we don't take care of it in our younger years, it can really affect us badly in our later years, right?
Very much so. Matter of fact, the realization is that a child is practically has no foot problems when they're born, and by age 50 or 60, 85% of the population has some foot problem. So we in honesty, we ruin our feet as we go along in life, and there's so little interest in taking care of the foot, and the most important thing is to add a foot examination or a concept of prevention versus treatment for the human foot.
Yeah, people don't think of that, that you, they can go in and have a checkup on their feet, right?
You know, it's very, very important. Very, very important to have a foot examination. And most of the patients that come into my office come in, as we say, for a single condition instead of coming in to have their feet examined. We have to explain to them that a single condition doesn't mean you have just one problem. And most single conditions have multiple problems.
What are the most common problems that you see?
Well, it depends upon the condition. If we're talking about diabetics, we have the problems of not neuropathy, not being able to feel their foot, burning, tingling, and numbness. In a younger population, we have the problems of what they do, occupation, sports, how they everything they're doing, including the shoes they wear, causing problems too. So we have multiplicity of symptoms and problems, and you have to adjust it to the individual person.
And so for people listening to this who are starting to notice these problems, foot exam is key, but what else?
Well, it does relate to the foot examination. And the biggest thing is to realize most of these conditions will not go away. It's not something you just, well, if I change a shoe or something like that. My best statement to those people are, in 56 years of practice, I've never heard a shoe yell ouch yet, but I've heard a lot of feet yelling ouch.
But you always see people with these orthopedic shoes. Isn't that the most common thing that people do to treat whatever problem they're having?
It's like if we can correlate this to dentistry. You need a good toothbrush, but you don't declare your mouth or dental care by just the toothbrush. We need shoes that fit. We need to understand shoes for the occasion. And then we have to realize there's the human nature of what people want to wear versus good foot health. And we have to combine these things in control of the problems that are involved. And most of the problems do become chronic. They're not usually acute, except when the individual pain hits. But the chronicity of the problem makes it something you have to control.
Should we throw out our high heels?
Not necessarily, but we should make the high heel fit better, especially the front part of the shoe. And there are devices we make to go into the shoes to control so the foot moves better in the shoe. Remember, it's the motion of the foot in the shoe that's really causing the problem. A foot isn't a static entity. It moves all the time in the shoe to move you forward, to protect you, and also to keep you controlling the weight. You got to realize that actually you take 8,000 to 10,000 steps a day, and it's 2 to 4 times your body's weight going through each step you take.
Yeah, our feet really do take a beating.
They sure do.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating, and I'm so glad we could share this with our listeners. April is National Foot Care Month. Take care of yours. Get an exam. Dr. Earl Horowitz, Jacksonville podiatrist, joining us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good foot health.
And in a moment, The Spectator, with all this weekend's events, will also tell you about Amelia Island's production of the classic Inherit the Wind. Stay with us.
Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, protests have erupted over an Indiana law that critics say allows businesses to discriminate against same-sex couples. Many other states have similar laws in effect. Controversy over so-called religious freedom laws around the country.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
This Friday, I'm closing the loop. Tracy Porter's son suffered a traumatic brain injury. She felt helpless at that moment, but she founded an organization to provide a blanket, toothbrush, and letters to others in that situation so they wouldn't feel helpless or alone. Closing the Loop, every Friday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
Join us weeknights at 7 for music. From symphonies to the latest indie music, you'll hear it all weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Deep below the sea, darling, on deep blue sea.
Welcome back. Well, next week, the Amelia Community Theater in Fernandina Beach opens the classic Inherit the Wind, based on the 1925 Scopes trial. The Scopes trial involved a substitute high school teacher, John Scopes, who was accused of violating Tennessee's Butler Act. That act made it unlawful to teach human evolution in any state-funded school. The trial publicized the big split between fundamentalists and modernists. The modernists said evolution was not inconsistent with religion, while fundamentalists argued the word of God took priority over all human knowledge. Of course, these themes are just as relevant today. Director Laura Swaim joins us now with a preview of the show. Thanks for coming down from Amelia Island to speak with us.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It's great to be here.
You know, it's almost been 100 years since the Scopes trial, but we're still having this argument in this country, aren't we?
Yes, we still are. Actually, even last year at Bryan College, which is also in Dayton, Tennessee, they changed as their belief statement in the college contract for the professors. They changed some wording, and they did have a lawsuit by two professors that finally got resolved. But once again, it was that issue about evolution and creationism. So it's still relevant today.
Absolutely. And this is a classic production. Is this why you chose to do this production? Because of the timeliness?
Yes, very much so. I teach high school English, and I'm drawn to these ideas where we have themes that are so heavy and so relevant, and I really was drawn to this play, and I do enjoy working with actors on dramatic pieces.
Yeah. Well, so for people that have never seen this show, tell us a little bit about the arc of the story.
Well, this is a fictional retelling of the Scopes Monkey Trial. And we start out basically in the small town there of Hillsboro. And we have Bertram Cates, who is the teacher who is on trial for teaching evolution in his classroom. And he has his lawyer, who is Henry Drummond, come from Baltimore to be his defense. And it's just a very classic piece of literature.
Mm-hmm. And it's been performed, gosh, it's been performed everywhere.
Everywhere.
And I believe it was made into a film, too.
There are
at least two films. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm sure with the live audiences, it really elicits strong reactions, depending on where people stand.
I think so. I'm trying to stay away from any of that division there, let people in their own minds decide what they feel is right.
Sure. And this is also in the tradition of just great arts and culture on Amelia Island. This is happening at the Fernandina Beach Amelia Community Theater.
Correct.
Amelia Island just so supports the arts, doesn't it?
Yes, we do. We're very, very blessed for such a small island to have so much cultural opportunity.
Absolutely. And so this is coming up not this weekend, but Inherit the Wind debuts next weekend, April 9th. Not too late for people to get some tickets.
Correct. It runs April 9th through the 25th. So we go every weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The second weekend, we also have a Sunday matinee.
Very nice. It's Inherit the Wind, the classic production, debuting at the Amelia Community Theater. They're on Cedar Street in Fernandina Beach. Get your tickets now at ameliacommunitytheater.org. That show opens on the 9th. Director Laura Swaim, break a leg. Thanks so much for letting us know all about it.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And we'll be back in a moment with The Spectator with a look at all this weekend's events. Keep listening.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet,
and who doesn't,
we're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
The dinosaur train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Bruce Eric Kaplan, a New Yorker cartoonist who's also a producer and writer on HBO's Girls and worked on Seinfeld and Six Feet Under. He has a new memoir. Also, we listen back to a 1985 interview with Cynthia Lennon, who has died at the age of 75. She was married to John Lennon from 1962 to 68. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Humans crave meat.
It just seems hardwired that everybody wants it.
So the fake meat industry is trying to build a better burger, but there's a problem.
Meat's really hard to do.
The business of fake meat,
bringing affordable, wholesome proteins to the widest masses that they can.
Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Weekdays at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Join us Sunday night at 7 when WJCT presents Radio Theater, only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Tonight we're delighted to bring you Warner Brothers' thrilling new picture, Conflict. The star of the picture and of tonight's adaptation, Humphrey Bogart.
If you're an enterprising business, you do what you gotta do, right? Like this.
Well, I think in our case, we enter the market and create a market so that we have a voice in the market.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Patagonia, the outdoor clothing company and profitable sustainability, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. The Suns, the Sharks, the Armada, all playing in the sports complex this weekend, and there's lots to do across the First Coast. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville Magazine's Carrie Speckman by phone today.
Good morning, Melissa, and please, I would like to just wish you a happy National Foot Care Month.
That's right, and I need to take care of my feet. I was grilling that doctor off air like there was no tomorrow. Yes, I was.
I think maybe we should go in and see him for a foot consultation. We should go together.
According to Dr. Horowitz, everyone should. So,
well, yeah,
we've been remiss in not attending to this.
I don't even wear heels.
You don't even wear... See, I've been wearing heels pretty much for the last umpteen thousand years, so I need a little
foot care. You're not 20 feet tall. Plus, I took a tumble last weekend and hurt my toe.
Uh-oh. Well, I'll get you his number. In the meantime, what is going on, my lovely?
There are so many things going on. I know you talked about sports. Before we get to all the sports tonight, there is 1964, a Beatles tribute. It's at the amphitheater, you say, on amphitheater. And Rolling Stone magazine does call it the best Beatles tribute on Earth.
Oh, really?
On Earth, yeah. Oh.
Well, then get out and see it.
I don't know about Jupiter or Pluto. Is Jupiter even a planet anymore? That's the one planet? Saturn.
They discovered a new one.
I can't keep track of these things. But that's, science isn't my forte.
That's Friday tonight.
Friday night, I'm sorry, yes. At the St. Augustine Amphitheater.
Very nice. The Beatles tribute, the best on Earth. And also Friday, the Sharks are playing their hated rivals, Orlando, at the arena. The Sharks get. How many of those games have you been to? They really are so much fun.
Do you really want to know?
I do.
Zero.
You've never been?
I know, that's terrible. Every year I'm like, this is the year I'm going to go.
No, you got to go at least once. It's fun. It's fun. They make it a fun time. It's very entertaining.
This year is going to be the year, Melissa Ross.
You and I will go together.
Year.
Yeah, we'll go.
Yeah, after we go for a foot. foot consultation.
Exactly. Then we'll hobble
we'll
on
right
in. We'll hobble on into the arena, the air conditioned arena. I prefer to watch my football in air conditioned comfort.
Oh yeah.
So
I don't know what's going on anyway, but
yeah. So it's Friday night.
8 p.m. at the arena.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Now this is a big. This is a big sports weekend.
Oh my gosh! Saturday the Suns are playing, but this isn't an official. It's not their opening game. They're playing the Miami Marlins, which I don't know when they became the Miami. I thought they were still the Florida Marlins, but whatever. But they're playing, like, I guess it's kind of like their parents, like the kids playing their parents, because that's like their farm team.
Oh right,
the Marlins.
Sure.
So yeah, like the kids playing their parents. That will be at 2:05 on Saturday.
Well,
and this. What?
Yeah, I hope they beat them. Let's hope for an upset.
But yeah, it would be kind of weird if they did, though, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be great, but kind of weird.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. Now,
okay, so then, same time, starting at noon, the Armada, of course, this is their big first game ever for real that counts. Whoop-de-doo, we're so excited. So they're having, first of all, they're having Can-Do Kickoff Festival. It starts at noon, and it's at Metro Park. They're going to have craft beer, food trucks, music by the Corbett Brothers Band, and OAR. Don't say OR, because that'll just make you look like a nerd.
Yeah. OAR is a great band. That's going to be a lot of fun.
And then the game starts at 7:30. So for $35, you can get into the festival, all the bands and everything, and then you can also get into the game. And they're trying to, the Armada is trying to set a new NASL attendance record.
And they may actually do it. Yeah, they may actually
make
that.
Well, yeah, because it's at Everbank, and I guess they had 13,000 some odd show up to their last game at Everbank, and the record's like 14,000. So we can do it, Jacksonville.
Let's do it, Jacksonville. Help them break the record. Come on out to the Armada game. Come on out to Everbank Field Saturday night about 7 o'clock. You can walk up to this.
Go to Metro Park. You can go to Metro Park first. Or you could also do the Five Point Spring Fest, which starts at noon in Five Points. And that, of course, Five Points, one of the most fabulous places in town. And I'm not saying that because I happen to live two blocks away from it.
Well, that does increase its level of fabulousness. I mean, let's be honest here.
Of course, of course. But they're going to have, like, local bands and food and all that jazz and blocking off the street. So you have your choice. Or you could go to Ram. You could go to Ram. You could go to Spring Fest and Five Points. You could go to Metro Park for the Candy Festival. So many things to do.
Now, there's one more item on your list, Spectator. What on earth is Pedal for Paws?
Pedal for Paws is a benefit for First Kiss No More Homeless Pets, one of my favorite nonprofits in this whole city. And they're starting at Unity Plaza. People will ride their bikes, and it's kind of like a hop on your bike, hop off your bike, and have events and music and stuff throughout the ride. The ride starts at Unity Plaza. It's going to ride through Riverside. It's going to go to San Marco. And it's going to go to Springfield. Now, the whole ride, if you want to do it, is 50 miles. But you don't have to do the whole ride. That's the beauty. You can ride and then stop and come back and get off and see bands and get off and do fun stuff. And, that's pretty much it. It starts at 8:30.
All righty.
And it ends at 1.
Now, this is getting ahead on the calendar just a little bit, but we do want to talk about next week's One Spark Festival, Spectatorilicious, because First Coast Connect will be doing shows at night during One Spark Week from
at
the
night?
Beautiful Mocha Theater stage.
At night?
Yes, we're going to be there. We're going to record them at night so that we can get all the fun.
Funny how nobody told me this. Was this intentional?
I am now bringing you into the circle of trust. It's just between you and me. Tuesday through Thursday of next week, April 7th, 8th, and 9th, 8 o'clock, be there or be square to be part of our live studio First Coast Connect audience during One Spark.
I will. I regret I will not be in my pajamas smelling of a campfire like I was last year since I had spent the night in a teepee.
You were hanging out in a teepee. So we need to have a high level talks right now to decide, will you be joining us next week on Wednesday or Thursday?
You tell me. You let me know.
All right. Well, we will have we will go over the very important schedule and get back to you on that.
Maybe I'll just camp out at Mocha and I'll just be on every show.
That would be good. You could You could warm up the audience for us. I don't think they're going to need a lot of warming up, though, honestly.
Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, we're very excited about this.
I'm very excited too. I love a live studio audience.
Yeah, it's First Coast Connect After Dark, sort of.
After Dark, I like it. It
live from
naughty.
It's a little naughty. It's a little edgy. We're gonna have some fun. And we want the audience participation on these shows, so we're going to record them Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, and then they will air the following mornings every week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday mornings. And
maybe I'll come on the other days just to be in the audience and be an obnoxious audience member and heckle you.
You know what? That will only add to the ambiance.
You could totally handle. You would be great because you would be great at handling hecklers.
I'd love
to see you handle heckler.
I almost now wish that this is going to happen just to prove you right.
You know what? You don't have to wish, ma'am.
you're already having your plan in motion, aren't you?
I'm not saying. I might have somebody come talk about the river. That's all I'm saying.
She's Carrie Speckman. Follow her on Twitter at Spectator. Check out her website for a look at all this weekend's events. And like I said, Spectator, I'll be looking out for you in that audience every night next week.
And good foot health to you, Melissa.
Good foot health. That's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. If you've got feedback, we always want it. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, a deadline on nuclear weapons negotiations with Iran approaches. Diane explores ongoing efforts to slow a Middle Eastern nuclear arms race and the threat of nuclear proliferation worldwide. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow with our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.